Welcome to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry, a program dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, advocating Christian families to adopt and get involved with foster care here in the Capital District, as well as globally, and encouraging and supporting those who've heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Join your hosts, Sandra Flack.
For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. Then the king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. That is from Matthew 25. This is Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans. I'm your host, Sandra Flack, and joining me on this cold day is Southern Missouri foster mom and blogger of Foster the Chaos blog, Dee Dee Button. Welcome to the show, Dee Dee.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for your willingness to be on the show and share your story of foster care with us. So let's just kind of start at the beginning. What led you and your husband, Ed, to become foster parents?
My husband and I, we knew very early on that if we wanted a family, we would kind of have to do so a little differently. I was diagnosed with polycystic ovaries at the age of 11. And so I knew very early on that fertility was going to be an issue for me. Once my husband and I, when we were dating, when things started to get a little more seriously, I kind of shared that struggle with him. And it was never an issue. We just knew we would have to do things a little differently if a family was what we wanted. And there's such a need for foster care, foster homes in our community. And we started doing some research and reading, just really kind of giving this a lot of thought if this was something that we wanted to pursue. And we probably did this for about 2 years before we decided to really get ready to go. We started getting our home ready. We started really just getting prepared emotionally about what we were getting ready to do. And then we were ready for our licensing process. So we just knew just because of those struggles that we were facing starting a family that we started looking into foster care and adoption through foster care, and here we are a little over a year later and haven't looked back since.
Wow. And I know there is a great need in Missouri. The statistics indicate that there are nearly 11,000 children in foster care there in Missouri, with over 2,000 of them available for adoption. Pretty close to the numbers in New York. New York has some of the highest numbers in the country. But So you knew there was a great need. You took the classes, became certified foster parents. About how long after you got certified did it take for you to get your first placement?
It was out the very next day.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure the ink was not even dry on our contract before we got our first placement. So we really just dove right in, and it wasn't even a couple months after that we had a second placement. So we just really hit the ground running, and it's just been such a thrill ever since then.
Wow. So you've been doing this a little over a year. How many children have you fostered in that time?
So since our licensing was completed, we've taken in 7 children total. 4 of them are still with us. So we've had 3 that were able to return home.
Wow. And what ages? What ages are the 4 that you currently have?
Oh, that we currently have, we have 4 under the age of 4. So
oh,
they
wow.
definitely keep us busy. We have
wow.
3 girls and 1 boy, all under the age of 4, and they are all just amazing in their own way.
Wow.
They're just wonderful kids.
And do you get to sleep at night?
No.
No.
Sleep.
I can a tiny bit relate. My oldest son and daughter-in-law have 3 children, and the oldest one just turned 5. So they've been doing the four and under for quite some time, and they don't know what sleep is either. They're kind of bleary-eyed most of the time, but that's okay.
So it's worth it.
Yeah, totally worth it. Dee Dee, you write a blog called Foster the Chaos. So tell us about the chaos.
The chaos really just kind of comes from my husband and I both have full-time careers, And we knew that was something that we really thought a lot of when we were deciding if this was something that we could do, was if it was something we could handle. Our careers weren't really something that we were willing to give up. So we tried to, the chaos really comes from trying to figure out how to keep focus on our careers, attending every FST meeting or PPRT meeting for the children, every court hearing, doctor's appointments, visits with the parents, just all of these things, just kind of juggling them can get a little chaotic.
Yeah.
I definitely recommend a planner to write everything down. But just the chaos is really just coming from trying to keep all of the balls we're juggling up in the air.
Wow. And for any parent, that is often the case. But then with foster children, like you said, you've got caseworkers and different meetings that have to be taking place. And mm-hmm. and that can add to a very full and busy calendar for sure. And especially when you've got four little ones and the no sleep thing, it can be pretty crazy, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I love your Foster the Chaos blog. And I was hoping you'd share a couple stories that you've written on your blog there. I loved the one about culture shock. Could you share that with us?
Sure, absolutely. So right now we have four children under four, but we've also had older kids as well. And that was something, the culture shock was something we definitely noticed going on with the older children. So what they're being taken away from is totally normal for them. They don't know any differently. So when they're taken out of a home that they know and they're familiar with, and they're placed into a completely different environment with new people, new schedules, new routines, new priorities, that can be very jarring to anybody. So part of that particular blog entry I shared was I did a foreign exchange program in Germany when I was in high school. And so that experience kind of helped open my eyes to just the culture shock even here. I was in a brand new environment. I couldn't speak the language as well as I thought I could. New people, I was away from my family. That was a very big one. Just new surroundings that you're just really diving right into can be very jarring, and it's very disorienting. And so after a while, it took a while for the boys to get used to us, and it took us a while to get used to the boys. But, you know, you just kind of have to be patient and recognize that it's a new environment for the kids. What we prioritize in our home might not have been a priority in the homes that they were in before. So just be very patient, because they're experiencing a culture shock. We definitely, in our home, we prioritize school and homework, and that was something that wasn't done before. And so it's very disorienting for the kids that come into your home to have a new set of not just rules, but priorities and different structure.
Yeah, everything really is different. Their foster kids are kind of coming out of a different kind of chaos where, you know, now there's different, everything's different. Every home kind of does things differently, and there's different rules and different ways of doing things and different foods, right? Not every family prepares the same kind of food the same way, and many of these kids are used to even not having food. And so it definitely, I love that analogy of culture shock, because that's really what it is for the kids coming in. But also it's a whole new world for foster parents when you're realizing, you know, the environment these children have come out of. That can be quite shocking as well. So I loved that one. And then I can also relate to your blog post on food hoarding. That's very common from in children that have come from hard places, whether they've come from foster care or an overseas orphanage even. So tell us about that story.
So the food hoarding, it really took us a while to really recognize what was going on. We had never experienced anything like that. So this actually happened around Halloween time, and we had taken the children trick-or-treating. So it kind of started off with wanting to keep their candy in their room. And we keep snacks and healthy snacks like baskets of fruit and granola bars, things like that on the counter for all of the kids. They have free reign of the kitchen. So So I explained to them that we just keep that kind of stuff in the kitchen, and you can eat it in the kitchen or at the dining room table. And when I would go in to change the sheets on the bed or to get laundry, to start a load of laundry, I would notice candy wrappers. And I'd have that conversation with them again, that we just keep that stuff in the kitchen or at the dining room table. We don't keep this in our room. And they would say okay, and that they understood. And then the next time I was in there getting laundry or changing the sheets, what have you, I would notice granola bar wrappers or bags of chips or things like that. And they were all hidden either under pillows or in pillowcases, in closets, in shoe boxes, under a bed, what have you. They were all strategically hidden. Mm. And that was when we really realized that we had a food hoarding issue going on. The kids didn't have a lot of food before they came to us. And so that was something we felt like definitely played a part in this. We let them know that we recognized what was going on. And the way we really handled that was we didn't feel like putting locks on the cabinets was going to help anything. We have a home. We're not running a prison. Hmm. So we did let them know that they could have an airtight container to keep in their room just to keep pests away or bugs and, you know, things like that that we definitely don't want in the home. But that was always an issue. And it took us a while to recognize, but, you know, we haven't been doing this very long. And so I feel like that was something we should have maybe seen a little earlier on, but it really kind of took us by surprise.
Yeah. And I love how you handled it, because food issues are very common in children who are malnourished or have not had food and they don't know when their next meal is coming from. That's a very real fear. So even if, you know, we tell our kids, you know, there's food in the kitchen, you can have it anytime you want it. They don't necessarily believe us, because that wasn't right. The case for them in the past. So allowing them, you know, recognizing it and then allowing them to have an airtight container to be able to keep their snacks in their room, so that they know that is there, you know, it's really a huge thing with kids. I've got some children adopted internationally. So when the two older ones were 7 and 9, when they came home to us, and kids in orphanages don't see food prepared in the kitchen, and they're not really getting fed a lot anyway, or any kind of quality of food. So for them to, you know, come into our home, talk about culture shock for them, mm-hmm. you know, they're seeing food prepared for the first time. And then it got to be like this thing where they were like hovering over me while I was cooking, like, what is this? You know, and I could have said spaghetti and meatballs, but that would have not meant anything to them. Uh-huh. That, you know, it was kind of draining in those early days, but they needed to know that, you know, every day that there was those three meals. And still today, sometimes they'll be, you know, they want to know what's for dinner. They want to know. And you know, we did the same thing. We had food out and available. You can help yourself to these healthy snacks anytime. But they need to know. And my youngest, who came home, who's now 13, it's actually written into his IEP at school that he can have access to snacks. So even though he gets lunch at school and breakfast at home, he has snacks he brings to school at age 13, and he's allowed to have a snack in class whenever he needs to, because he just needs to know. He can't focus on schoolwork if he's not sure if he's going to get food, even though he's mm-hmm. been home for a long time now. It's just so deeply ingrained. So I love how you handled that. I thought that was great.
And another thing that really helped with the older boys too, with the food hoarding, was we really involved them in the meal prepping in the house, yeah. with the grocery shopping, and we would let them pick things that they liked or wanted to try. And that was something that definitely helped out a lot as well.
Oh, I love that. That's a great idea. So Dee Dee, a lot of times people who are considering foster care, or maybe it's something that scares folks away from becoming foster parents, is fostering a child, loving a child, pouring so much into a child, and then the child goes home. They go back to their birth family, or one of their parents Either way, it's called reunification, which really is the goal of foster care, is for children to be in a safe place while they need to be, but then reunited with their parents when it's safe and prudent to do so. So a lot of people are afraid that they'll get attached and then they have to give the child back. And that's often an excuse for why they might not want to foster. So some of your children have gone back home, have been reunified. What has that experience been like for you?
That's something we definitely hear a lot when we tell people that we're foster parents, is that I could never send them back.
Yeah.
And we just always explain that that's the goal, is to send them back, as long as that's safe and appropriate for the child. The first time that we ever sent a child home was very hard. It was also a very proud moment for us as well, and I know that might be a little odd to hear, but with that first child that we sent home, we knew the moment we met her bio parents that she was going to go home. Those parents were so determined. They were very willing and eager to do whatever they had to do to bring her back home. And we knew that our time with her was going to be limited. But that didn't stop us from loving her so fiercely and just caring for her and staying up with her when she is sick or if she needed anything. You know, we were there for her just like as if she were our own, but we knew that our time with her was limited. And that's something that's important to know when you want to be a foster parent, is that's always a very real possibility, is that they're going to go home. And while it may hurt, it does hurt, even to this day, we still wonder what she's doing or how much she's grown or things like that. But it's always been worth it to know that she can go back to her family because we were able to keep her safe while they were able to get their affairs in order. And so it's even when they go home, it's just still very rewarding. Very hurtful, though. I mean, you do get attached, but that's exactly what these kids need.
Yeah.
And so we were able to tear ourselves down and send her home because that's what was the best thing for her. And so it is very hard, and even now, you know, it still hurts to think about. You do miss them, but that was what was best for her, and we're excited that we could be a part of her life, even if it was only for a few months, but going home was what was best, and we're excited to have loved her, even for that short time she was with us, and so it is a hard thing, but it's so worth it. I can't explain it other than that. It's so rewarding, even if they do go home. Mm. But that's always the goal, and that's what you kind of like to see. If that's what's best for the kids and they get to be with their mom and dad again, then that's great.
Yeah, it's success all the way around when the bio family, like you said, in this particular case, especially where they're eager to do what they needed to do to get their child back, and they did it. And that's a good thing, you know? And
yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, I love that. It hurts, it's hard, but it's worth it.
Absolutely.
So, Dee Dee, both you and your husband have careers. You mentioned that you both work full time. How do you navigate four children, all those appointments and the needs that are unique to foster care, jobs and life? How do you do all that?
Communicate, communicate, communicate. That is the biggest thing. My husband and I, it's Sunday evening or Monday morning, we'll send each other an email or have just a quick sit down, go over what we have going on for the week. And as I just mentioned earlier, we have a planner and write everything down. And we try to schedule things out as much as possible so we have notice to work around. If we have a meeting, we'll need childcare during this time, or if we have something in the evening, you know, so we can try and prepare for it as much as possible. But we communicate with each other, and that's the biggest help. We try and divide and conquer. That's another big one that helps us out a lot. It used to be when we just had one or two placements, we would both like to be at a team meeting, or both like to take the child to a parent visit, or both like to go to court. And now that really isn't possible anymore.
Yeah.
So we like to divide and conquer. We will kind of lay out for the week, okay, you go to this meeting and I will drop off for this parent visit, and just work out who will be where during what time of the week. So planning things out and divide and conquer, write everything down, because if you have multiple placements, they're not all going to be on the same schedule. They're going to be on a completely different court rotation. The parent visits will be on different days. So it's definitely, if you have that supportive spouse, or you, if you're not a single parent, you have that partner there, divide and conquer. You may not both be able to go to everything, but just have someone there to show up for those kids.
Yeah, and your employers are supportive to your scheduling.
Absolutely.
As well?
Absolutely, yes. We both are so fortunate to have the employers that we do. They're so understanding and just very supportive of what we do. So having that kind of support in place with your employer is the biggest help as well. Just knowing that they're supportive, and if something comes up, that everything is going to be okay.
Oh, that's awesome. And what about extended family? Do you have a supportive extended family?
Our support system has just really stepped up. We are so lucky because it's our parents, our siblings, our aunts, our cousins, everyone, our friends even, have all just really stepped up and embraced this journey that we're on, what we're doing. If you have a birthday party for one of the kiddos, or Christmas, everyone shows up with a gift for them, birthday presents, things like that. If you didn't know any different, if you were to walk into our home, you would think that these kids have been part of our family since day one. And some of them we've only had a month. So Christmas time, everybody came with gifts just like they would for anybody else in our family.
Wow.
And so we're just very fortunate to have that support system that we do. If we need a break even, you know, we have family and friends that are offering to come and hang out with the kids for a bit, to help out however we need it. So having that support has really been just such a blessing. We're very fortunate to have that support system in place that we do.
Yeah, and that is key to success, really. So if we're able to have that, if we have supportive families and friends, and I know even church families, then it can be huge. Because not everybody, we know not everybody is able to foster, not everybody is able to adopt, but for people who do want to get involved and they want to help, they can be a support to a family that is fostering and could use those breaks and could use that little bit of extra help. That's a great way for everybody to be able to do a little something. So I love that. So Dee Dee, are you considering adopting through foster care at all?
Yes, we are an adoptive home. We have the option of getting our license to adopt in addition to fostering. So we are an adoptive home as well. So when that right kiddo for our family comes along, we are ready to go.
Oh, wonderful. I love to hear that. Permanency for every child is so, so important. So as we get ready to wrap up here today, Dee Dee, what is on your heart that you'd really like our listeners to hear? Any advice?
I would just say that take a chance. I've known people who have really kind of been trying to figure out if this is the right journey for them. And as you had said, everyone can help out in some way. So whether you're an adoptive parent or a foster parent, maybe you can volunteer as a CASA, a court-appointed special advocate.
Yeah.
Maybe you can help with resource centers to help out. Just whatever you can do to help out. These kids are so wonderful, and they just need help, and they need home, and they need love, and they need support and structure. And just take a chance. That's all I have to say. It's just been the most incredible journey that we've ever been on, and we haven't regretted it for a second at all. Oh, it's just been incredible.
I love that. So how can our listeners find your blog? Because I love your blog.
Oh, thank you. It's fosterthechaos.com. We have an Instagram page and a Facebook page as well. It's just Foster the Chaos.
Foster the Chaos. There's a lot of truth in that. So, Dee Dee, thank you for opening your home to children in foster care and for being a support to other families through your blog. Thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I want our listeners to know that, again, they can read more about your foster care adventures. You can find Dee Dee's blog at fosterthechaos.com, find her on Facebook, find her on Instagram. Love those blog posts. And we thank you, our listeners, for joining us today and listening to Orphans No More. You can find more episodes on our website at justicefororphansny.org and on iTunes, Google Play, and Podbean. Just search for the show by name, Orphans No More. Be sure to follow or subscribe to the podcast. Every 25th follower gets a free bag of Greater Things Roasters coffee. Who doesn't love a good podcast and some really good coffee? JFO is a nonprofit ministry on a mission to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless. We inspire, educate, and equip the body of Christ to walk out James 1:27, whatever way God calls you. Maybe by becoming a foster or adoptive parent, maybe by wrapping around and supporting those who are in the trenches and in the chaos, maybe by getting your church on board to do Care Portal. You can learn more at our website at justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for supporting this program by listening today, sharing what you've heard, and praying for orphans and children in need everywhere. More information is available at justicefororphansny.org. Visit and discover how you can make a difference in a child's life. And be sure to tune in to Orphans No More next Friday.